Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 3rd of September. Wendell Potter, who was to have been with us on Tuesday's program, will be with us in just a few moments here on the Ideas Network. Many listeners have requested this hour. He is with the Center for Media and Democracy, Senior Fellow on Healthcare, but he was a corporate public relations executive for 20 years, and last year he left his job as head of communications for one of the nation's largest health insurers to try his hand at helping socially responsible organizations, including those advocating for meaningful healthcare reform. In 2007, went to a healthcare expedition in Wise, Virginia at a county fairground. It happened to be close to his hometown. And doctors had set up all kinds of places to provide care in animal stalls. People were lined up from South Carolina, Georgia, Kentucky, and Tennessee. People, he said, were probably people that he had grown up with, and it made it real to him. He asked the question, what country am I in? How can Wendell Potter sit here and say that he was just finding out there were a lot of Americans who don't have adequate insurance and needed health care? In his business, he says he didn't really see what was going on. He knew there were 47 million people uninsured, but he didn't put faces with that number. He had seen premiums rising, people taken from the rolls, people who couldn't afford the health care that his company, Cigna, and other companies were offering. But this was face-to-face. He'll be with us in just one moment. He's received a lot of attention and, as I said, a lot of requests to have him on the program. A couple announcements for you. This Friday at 7 o'clock on the Ideas Network, it's an NPR News healthcare special. Host Robert Siegel will be recapping recent political developments in the healthcare debate and explore the roles various parties play in the current healthcare system. So this is tomorrow, Friday, September 4 at 7 o'clock, a look at the debate over the future of healthcare in America. It will be airing in place of the second hour of On Point. You may want to listen to that, and I'm sure many of you will. Just an update on our healthcare forum taking place at Frederick Hospital in the Cancer Center on September 16. We are pretty filled for this event, where there's a tremendous amount of interest. But if you'd like to call and put your name on a waiting list, you can certainly do that. We don't want to overwhelm the hospital with hundreds of people, so we have quite a few people attending. And here's the number, though, in case there are people who can't show up. Here's a waiting list number for you. Katie Mattson is the contact, and the number is 414-227-2047. 414-227-2047. These are some of the people we have scheduled. We're going to have a panel of 8 people who will be with us for the entire 2 hours. Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, Karen Timberlake, will be joining us. We will also have John Bartkowski, who is the president and chief executive officer of the 16th Street Community Healthcare Center, which is located here in Milwaukee. Dr. John Pryor will be with us. He was recently appointed CEO of Medical College Physicians at the Medical College of Wisconsin. We'll also be speaking with the CEO of Bellin Hospital in Green Bay. George Kerwin will join us. And you'll recall that President Obama was in Green Bay in a much publicized visit to Green Bay, hailing the region as a model for what healthcare everywhere in the country could be. So those are 4 of the people who will be with us. We will have somebody from the insurance industry will be joining us, and other people will join us as well. So if you can't attend, make sure that you mark that day. It'll be an important broadcast, September 16 for 2 hours. Our show will broadcast from Frederick from 9 to 11. So that's the story. And here's how you can join our conversation. We're still trying to reach Wendell. Our number for you to join the conversation this hour is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And we do have an email address. If you'd like to send an email, feel free to do that. That address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Wendell Potter will be joining us in just one moment. He writes extensively about the Senate Finance Committee, the 3 Democrats and 3 Republicans who were picked by committee chair Max Baucus supposedly says drafting a bipartisan bill, but in reality, this will be a gift to the insurance industry, he says, because this group includes some of the industry's best friends on Capitol Hill. They are reportedly giving serious consideration to replacing the good idea of a public insurance option with an idea that is sheer fantasy, a few nonprofit cooperatives that would be expected to compete with the cartel of giant for-profit insurance companies and win in the marketplace. And we found him. Good. We're set. Wendell Potter is joining us. Again, our number, we're going to be flooded with phone calls. Call early, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Hello, Wendell Potter. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're a much requested guest, so we're very happy to have you here. Why don't you start by telling us this story of your going to the healthcare expedition in Wise, Virginia in the year 2007. It was kind of a wake-up moment for you.
It was. I was still working as head of corporate communications at Cigna, and I was visiting relatives, and I picked up the local newspaper. My parents live in East Tennessee, but it's very close to the Virginia line. I read about this healthcare expedition that was being held at the fairgrounds in Wise County, which is a small town in southwestern Virginia in the coal mining area. I went there out of curiosity, and when I walked through the fairground gates, I was just absolutely stunned at what I saw. I had no idea that I would be seeing hundreds and hundreds of people lined up in the rain, because it was raining that day, waiting to get care that was being provided free to them by doctors who were volunteering their time over 3 days. And they were treating people in animal stalls and under tents that had been erected just to take care of the big crowds they anticipated. Over that 3 days, they treated thousands of people and actually had to turn some people away because the demand was so great. It was just absolutely, like I said, stunning. I knew, obviously, that there is a big problem in this country with almost 50 million people now without insurance. I knew that we had a growing problem of people who were underinsured, but I had never seen it so vividly on display as I saw it that day. And that was a big turning point for me. I realized then that what I was doing for a living and the industry that I was working for was not what I should be doing.
And you went back to corporate headquarters and told them what you had seen, and what was the response?
Well, you know, it was as if, well, that's nice. It didn't register on a lot of people. I guess it's one of those things that you have to be there to get the full impact of it. I did take a lot of pictures, which I've shared since then, just to give people an idea of what it was really like. It was, you know, within a couple of weeks after that, I was having to fly to a meeting in Connecticut from where I lived and worked in Philadelphia, and I was on a corporate jet, and it just hit me suddenly while I was flying that people's premiums were helping me to fly that way in such luxury, and that there were many people who were still waiting for care, I just remembered the people who were standing in line that day who obviously had no idea that insurance premiums were used to pay for executives to travel in such luxury. And while I was on this plane, I was served my lunch on gold-plated china.
Oh my!
And it was sitting in leather chairs, and I was served. I was given gold-plated flatware to eat my lunch with, and it was just an amazing contrast to what I had experienced just a couple of weeks before.
You have talked about the insurance industry using the same tactics they've used over the years, particularly back in the early 90s, leading the effort to kill the Clinton health reform plan. What are those tactics?
They include fear-mongering, I guess, is one way to just kind of stated overall, but they set up front groups with using PR firms to do this. They have a lot of connections with conservative talk show hosts through these PR firms. They develop talking points that include things that are words that are designed to scare people away from reform, like making people believe that what is being proposed in reform legislation would lead to a government takeover of the healthcare system, or that we would be heading down the slippery slope towards socialism. They use these PR firms to do the dirty work for them. They set up front groups with names that sound very good, like Healthcare America, but which are really set up to mislead people and provide a lot of disinformation and often downright lies.
And Wendell, what do you think is the basic fear concerning a public option here? Is it that insurance companies won't make as much money, pharmaceuticals? What is the basic fear here?
The basic fear is just that, that they might not make as much money. A public option would obviously be available to a lot of people who are currently uninsured, and it might ultimately be available to people who have private insurance. But it's primarily created to meet the need, the great need, of people who don't have insurance right now. The insurance industry thinks that it can fashion reform in a way that all the people who are uninsured right now would be forced to buy insurance and would be forced to buy it from a private insurance company. If there is no public option, they would have a captive audience of, they would have all those millions of people all to themselves. Obviously, these people being uninsured and many of them in low-income jobs. In fact, most of the people who are uninsured are working people, but don't make enough money to be able to afford the overpriced premiums that insurance companies charge. So they want to defeat the public option so that they can capture all of these new people and enroll them in their health plans and get subsidies from the government to help pay the premiums.
Mm-hmm. What did you see in your years in the industry to get people off the rolls who were sick?
What they do it in a couple of ways. One is something that is called rescission. It's kind of a fancy word for canceling coverage when somebody gets sick. This occurs when someone enrolls in a health plan or takes a health insurance policy outside of the workplace. Obviously, many people don't have the ability to get insurance through their job, so they have to buy it privately or in the individual market, and you have to fill out an application, and among the things you have to put down are any pre-existing conditions or any illnesses that you've had in the past that the insurance industry wants to know about, because they will not cover what they refer to as a pre-existing condition. If you fail to include something that they later think should have been included, once you get sick and have medical claims, they will go back and review your application and cancel your coverage, even though you might have been paying your premiums on time every month or year.
And you also have talked extensively about if you have some person in your small business who may be filing a lot of claims, that small business may not be able to afford the increased premiums because of the one sick person.
That's right. And, of course, that penalizes not only the one sick person, but every other person who's employed in that small business. Obviously, no fault of the person who gets sick. But what happens is that the insurance company will look at the claim experience of that small business, and when the account comes up for renewal, usually around the first of the year, the insurance company very likely will jack up the rates so high that the small business will have to either cut benefits drastically, shop for another carrier, which would not be very easy to do, because even if they did that, they'd have to provide information about the employees and their claim experience. More often than not, the small businesses just drop coverage. They just can't afford to keep doing it. The premiums for small businesses have risen much faster and much higher than they have for large businesses. They, in particular, are penalized.
If this is the case and everybody's paying more, why is this such a struggle? Why does the president have to go before a joint session of Congress? We're hearing news reports that this plan is really on thin ice. It seems as though a lot of people are hurting. Why not massive public support for some significant reform?
Because the insurance industry's disinformation campaign works very well in misleading people and getting people very concerned about the healthcare reform, like I mentioned before. They conduct massive disinformation campaigns to persuade people that they should be afraid of reform and they should be afraid of a public option. And it's all motivated by greed. They want to make as much money as they can off of us. They want to have all of our premium dollars go straight to them, and they want to skim off as much of those premium dollars to be available for profits as possible.
Let's go to phone calls. We have many of them. Wendell Potter, our guest this hour, and we start our calls with Scott from Middleton. Hi, Scott.
Hi. Thank you, Wendell. I'm covered by Cigna Insurance through my employer's national group plan. I cannot buy insurance because no one would sell it to me at any price. I have multiple sclerosis. I use a biological drug whose patent expired during 2007. As you probably know, the FDA has no approval route for generic biological drugs. So I can't buy a generic version of my medicine. During 2002, when I was first covered by Cigna, my medicine cost $960 per month, and now the medicine costs $2,800 per month. There's a generic version available of my medicine in Europe, but not in the United States because the FDA isn't empowered to review and approve generic biological drugs. Why do I not see Cigna and other health insurance companies fighting for a generic version of my medicine in our country? Is there an alliance between pharma and insurance companies to preserve the status quo?
Yes. I mean, there's a pretty close relationship between insurers and pharmaceutical companies. Now, at times, they obviously are at odds. The insurance company tries to strike the best deal with pharmaceutical companies, often working through a pharmacy benefit management company, and Cigna happens to own its own PBM, as they call it. It makes no sense. But one of the things to keep in mind is that the big special interests, like the insurance industry, and the pharmaceutical industry, and even organized medicine, often the American Medical Association and medical device makers, will often team up, even though they have often differing interests. If they can team up and defeat reform, they will do it, as they did in 1994 when they teamed up to defeat the Clinton plan. You know, what your situation is just shameful. I'm really sorry to hear a report like that, and I hope that there's some relief that you might be able to get some way, and hopefully reform might be a way to do it. But it doesn't sound like it would be a solution that would come quick enough for you in the absence of reform.
Yeah. How are you dealing with this? Are any of the costs covered for you, Scott?
I'm covered through a national plan, and so I'm better off than people who have insurance plans that have a tier 4 medicine where they have to pay a percentage of their cost. So there are people with MS who might have my medicine, $2,800 per month today, who have a 30% copay. They've got more than $900 per month out-of-pocket expense. That's, you know, more than my mortgage.
Right.
They're suffering badly, and they can't buy health insurance because no insurance company will sell them health insurance at any price. I'm only 37 years old, and I've got a lifetime of this. So many of us, we need reform badly, and I'm trying to figure out why don't I see Cigna and insurance companies saying, wait a minute, they've got generics of this very expensive medicine available in Europe. But we can't get it here in the United States to help control costs. It just is maddening.
Yeah. Thank you, Scott, for your call. Sharon is next from Milwaukee. Hello, Sharon.
Hi. Thank you for this show. Mr. Potter, I wanted to bring the discussion to the area of what they call the insurance runaround, that someone puts in a claim, gets a denial, but the person feels that, no, this should be covered, and they go back and appeal, and they keep getting bounced around between places until what usually happens is that the person just says, forget it, I can't deal with this, it's making me crazy. I did a little bit of research on the web, and I don't know if this number is accurate, but it said that only 1 in 12,000 appeals is overturned. And I'm just wondering if you can speak as to Cigna, how they decide which claims to deny and which claims not to deny, and if there actually are inside statistics of how many people they're going to get to just back off.
You know, I don't know. I don't know if there are any stats about that, about how many people will just back off. But clearly that happens a lot. People are often just frustrated. The information that people get from their insurance companies often is very confusing and hard to understand. And the process is maddening. And it's understandable why some people just finally give up, even if they have a legitimate appeal. I don't know if 1 in 12,000 is right. I think it's very worthwhile for people to stick with it and continue with the appeal. Depending on what the appeal is, you may be able to ask for an outside opinion. And that happens if something is denied that is fairly significant, such as a doctor's request of the coverage for a transplant. It doesn't have to be that major, but you might be able to ask for an external review of whatever it is that's being denied.
And thank you very much for the call. Wendell Potter is our guest this hour, senior fellow on healthcare at the Center for Media and Democracy. He worked, as you know, for Cigna for a number of years, a major health insurance corporation, holding a number of positions, including head of corporate communications and the company's chief corporate spokesperson. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Our number is 800-486-8655, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, Aphorisms, an anthology of aphorisms that begin with the word if. You'd be amazed how many there are, thousands. All right, back to phone calls for Wendell, 800-486-8655. And let's go next to Kathy from Door County. Hi, Kathy. Kathy, are you there? Sorry, Kathy, your line is just not very good. So we can go to Gary from Chippewa Falls. Hi, Gary.
Hi, I guess I got a couple questions. One of them would be, why isn't there a government review for denial for insurance companies? I mean, we regulate a lot of things, and there's an insurance commission, I know that. But, I mean, there should be a way that we could expedite, you know, make these work through faster on a denial, so that and then have some independent of the insurance company to really look if it should have been denied. I mean, I think that'd be a great program if somebody could think about doing it. And the single-payer system, I mean, other nations, don't they have this system? And if other nations can do it, why is this so impossible here?
The answer to your first question regarding a government review, I think you're right. It could be a very good idea. What the industry proposed as an alternative to government review was to do have a system of private review. There is a mechanism, and there are review organizations, but it's administered privately. The government is not involved. The industry was able to persuade government that, you know, there's no need for you to get involved in this and spend a lot of tax dollars to do the reviews. We could do it ourselves, and that's what happened. The government just has never approached it that way with any funding that would make it possible. So that's why that has happened. With regards to single payer, you're exactly right. It works extremely well in other countries. In fact, the United States is the only country in the developed world that lets so many of its citizens go without coverage. Most of the other countries, in fact, all the other developed countries have figured out some way to make sure that their citizens have access to care. Not so here in Canada. They have a single payer system that works very well. The reason we are not considering it this year is because the health insurance industry is so powerful that it's been able to keep it from being seriously considered in Congress. It's a shame. It's shameful that Congress is so beholden and influenced by the private insurance industry, but that's exactly why.
Thanks very much for the call. What are your thoughts, Wendell, about what's going through the Senate, what's going through the House, what the president wants in terms of health care reform? And the third part of the question is whether or not we will see any kind of significant health care reform in the next month.
I think the current status of legislation, there are a couple bills in each chamber. The bill that gets the most attention on the House side is one, I think it's H.R. 3200, or House Resolution 3200, that is an emphasis bill. It has attracted a lot of attention, positive and negative. It does include a very important element of reform, which is creating a public health insurance option that would compete against private insurance companies. I think the president sincerely wants that. It's been, by that I mean the public health insurance option, it's been very contentious because it is something that the private insurance industry wants to kill. They don't want to have that public option as a competitor. So they've been pulling out all the all the stuff to try to kill it, and have been lobbying not only Republicans relentlessly, but also the Blue Dog Democrats to try to block it. I think there's a chance that it could wind up in legislation that goes to the president. The Republicans have fiercely opposed it. I think there's very little chance that in the Senate Finance Committee, where Senator Obama is trying to strike some kind of a bipartisan compromise on legislation. I just don't think that's going to happen, because the Republicans are not interested in any kind of reform that was included in the president's campaign platform, or that the majority of the Democrats want. So I think, to tell you the truth, that's been largely a waste of time. I am hopeful that there can be legislation that will make illegal a lot of the practices that the insurance industry currently engages in, such as using pre-existing conditions to deny coverage and deny people from even getting insurance. Yeah, it's just an example. There are many others that need to be made illegal as well. But when Congress gets back into session after Labor Day, I'm really hopeful that members of the House and Senate leadership will have the backbone to say, look, we got to get something done, and we've got to do something that's good for the American people, not just for the special interest of the insurance company.
And could the president, and will the president, do this under reconciliation?
It's possible that he can. The reconciliation process is somewhat limiting. You can't do everything that is in the House legislation under reconciliation. It has to, in some way, pertain to the budget for it to be going, for it to go through the reconciliation process. There are experts who think that a public health insurance option would survive the reconciliation process, would qualify for that, and that it could be used. It's something I think that Democrats know is an option. They probably would prefer not to use it. But on the other hand, it's almost inevitable that the Republicans would try to use a filibuster to block reform if reconciliation is not used.
Right. Let's go to Betty from Oak Creek. Hi, Betty.
Hi. Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. My question is, do you think we can get a real good health plan, as these politicians were given a lot of money from these insurance and drug companies for these politicians' elections? Do you think that these elected officials are going to turn their back on these big companies who supported them?
Well, many will not. The insurance industry and other special interests have been anticipating this debate for a long time. So they have spent millions and millions of dollars in campaign contributions to serving Republicans. I'm sure that almost every Republican has received money from the insurance industry, and more recently have more conservative Democrats. Those that are part of the Blue Dogs Democratic Caucus. A lot of them certainly are back on the insurance industry. It's been a steady stream of contributions for them. So they will vote however we ask them to vote. Others will have more concern for their and vote the right way for reform that benefits average Americans more than the insurance industry. It remains to be seen. I'm hopeful that some of the Blue Dogs will come around and realize that the public option is important, and we really need to get reform passed this year. We can't wait another year to do it.
Thank you, Betty, very much for your call. 800-486-8655. John is next from Grand Rapids. Hi, John.
Good morning. A couple things real quick. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how actuaries function, and it, you know, wouldn't that kind of be the private sector death panel, if you will, equivalent to what the conservatives call a death panel. And then talking about small employers made me think about, you know, you have one sick employee who costs you a ton, and most years you can just cruise. Could you talk a little bit about stop-loss insurance, please?
Well, first of all, regarding death panels, you know, that's a term that was created clearly to scare people, and there's nothing remotely close to a death panel provision in the any legislation that's before Congress. It was a scare tactic that clearly worked because it scared a lot of people and has been the topic of enormous amount of news coverage. What you do have in the private world right now is what I guess you would call a some could call a death panel when an insurance company makes the decision to deny a procedure that's requested by a doctor for his or her patient. Often the patient has no means to pay for it without insurance. So many people die because of, even if they're insured, because the insurance company decides that it's the requested procedure is not something that is covered under the benefit plan. It happens all the time. Many people die every day as a result of not having insurance coverage for some needed procedure that the insurance companies will not pay for. Stop loss, your question there. That is a term that that applied to helping businesses when they do have large claims that they can have insurance that protects them from exorbitant claims that they just simply couldn't afford. So, in other words, they can offer insurance to their employees, but also take on additional stop loss insurance to help them try to, in the event that, that there are substantial medical claims that are filed on behalf of a of an employer, on behalf of a patient who's an employee. Stop loss is something that that big employers use quite a bit to protect them against the possibility of large claims being filed.
Thank you, John, very much for the call. Let's go next to Jeff from Milwaukee. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I work for a private insurance company, and the whole debate has gotten me personally rethinking, you know, what my purpose is in life and all of those kinds of things. But I wanted to specifically go back to the denials and appeals process.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if a person wants to go to the appeals process, because of a denial or you know, there's no coverage under the plan, et cetera, they really do need to look at their contract first, because if it's a contract exclusion, it's pretty much set in stone.
Hmm.
They'll do an appeal, but and it's generally by an outside party. But if it's a contract exclusion, it's what the group asks for. So, you know, if somebody wants gastric bypass surgery and it's a contract exclusion, that's pretty much it. So, you know, from that standpoint, you know, the company's standpoint, they follow stringent guidelines. It's not somebody flipping a coin or doing something as simple as that to take a look at these individual, you know, situations. They're following guidelines and medical policies and et cetera.
So, and what would be the reason and what are the extent of the contract exclusions, Jeff?
The extent?
Mm-hmm.
It's generally a list that's given by the group. They'll say we'll cover, or they'll have their regular coverages, and then they'll have certain things that are just excluded because they're marginal or they're experimental or investigational or, you know,
mm-hmm.
something along those lines.
Mm-hmm. Wenda, would you like to comment?
Yeah, he's right. A lot of policies do have exclusions, and it is important for people to realize or to find out what is not covered. Often it's not so easy to get that information. You have to request it. And I know that one of the problems we have is that people don't know or really can't understand or even get information they need as to what is covered, what benefits are covered. There are a lot of things that are written into the contract, the policy specifically, that are not covered. And he mentioned investigational or experimental. Almost anything that would be deemed to be investigational or experimental, those are terms that can be broad and cover a lot of things. So one might not know if what is being requested for treatments would fall into that category. One case in particular that I was involved in before I went to Cigna involved the denial of coverage for a procedure that was requested, a liver transplant for a young woman in California, denied the transplant on the basis that the procedure in this particular case had been accepted. The doctor's patient at UCLA said it was a thing that might save her life. Cigna deemed it to be decision that ultimately fell, presumably by external review or during the external review process, Cigna did not cover it. It later did agree to cover it after there was a big public protest, but from the time that the company decided to cover it, too late, and the young girl died 2 hours later.
Oh. Thank you, Jeff, very much for the call. Wendell Potter is our guest, and Wendell is a senior fellow on Healthcare Center for Media and Democracy. He worked for, many of you are familiar with his story, Cigna, a major health insurance corporation, for a number of years in a variety of positions until his conscience got the better of him and he became concerned about denial of coverage and the large number of people in this country who are uninsured. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And the email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, we'll speak with the author of Aphorisms, an anthology of aphorisms that begin with the word if. And there are tons of them. So that should be fun. Second hour. Wendell Potter is here this hour. I'm sorry about the phone. I understand it's hard. We're hearing most of what he's saying, but he had to be on a cell phone because he has to be this hour. So sometimes it's not entirely clear, but worth our straining every now and then to hear some of the words. Let's go next to Caroline from Green Bay. Hi, Caroline.
Hi. Yeah, my suggestion is why don't we, for the public option, I would like to see that rolled in with Medicare and allow people who, you know, have family incomes of maybe $50,000, can't afford a $10,000 private insurance plan, but could afford to pay some premiums into Medicare. Seems like that would increase the risk pool besides just seniors and disabled people and bring more money into the system, which is financially, you know, we know in some trouble anyway. The billing, all of that stuff is all set up already. And then maybe, I know I hear about the reimbursement rate. My question is, too, isn't it true that insurance companies don't reimburse 100% of a doctor's or hospital's bill either? We always hear about how low the reimbursement is for social or for Medicare. Is that really that far off from what insurance companies reimburse?
Your first question regarding Medicare and the possibility of expanding it, I think it's a great idea. And it has been proposed in the past. It unfortunately just did not make it into any legislation that's being seriously considered right now. The idea of Medicare for all is absolutely, I think, a terrific idea. The Medicare system works well. It could certainly use, as you noted, an injection of new revenue, which an expansion like you described could create. But it's just simply not anything that's being seriously considered as the same way, single-payer legislation is not being seriously considered by Congress. With regards to reimbursement rates, yeah, the private insurance industry does not pay doctors or hospitals anything close to the bill charges. They negotiate with doctors and hospitals themselves separately. Every insurance company does these negotiations with these doctors, the doctor groups and hospitals. So the reimbursement varies from company to company based on how good a deal they can strike. And it usually does wind up being higher than what Medicare pays, but not necessarily always. In fact, most of the reimbursement that even the private insurance industry uses is based on a Medicare fee schedule.
And thank you very much for the call. Tell us the story, because it's an interesting one, of how afraid the insurance industry was of Michael Moore and his film Sicko.
Well, they were very afraid of it, even though the industry would try to make you think that it was not, just kind of a ho-hum approach to the movie. But leading up to the movie, there was the expectation, the fear that Michael Moore would come and do some ambush interviews with insurance company CEOs.
Uh-huh.
So I know all of us did media training with our CEOs to make sure that they knew what to do if that were to happen. Of course, Moore did not use that tactic this time for that movie. He went instead to countries around the world that have universal coverage and did a documentary that was based on the care that is delivered to citizens of those countries, and compared it and contrasted it with the lack of care that so many people in this country receive. It was, I think, a very effective and well-done documentary, obviously with a point of view. The industry, when it found out exactly what was in the movie, decided and knew how it would try to mount a campaign to discredit it, it started using a lot of the same methods and scare tactics it has used to defeat legislation, which is to set up front groups and to use those front groups and its shills in Congress and in the conservative media and in through business groups to scare people away from reform that might lead to a system like the other countries depicted in the movie have, such as Canada, for example, again, using terms like a government takeover of the healthcare system and socialized medicine. So it used the same tactics, the same language to try to discredit that movie that it's using now and has always used in the past to try to beat back legislation that might hinder profitability.
We go to Michael from Milwaukee next. Hi, Michael.
Morning. Healthcare, in a way, I'm getting a little bit sick of hearing about healthcare because nobody really seems to want to deal with the real main issue in this problem is the fact that we cannot, as a country, afford the quality of health care that we now provide for some people. We can't afford that for everybody. We just can't do it. The money isn't there. The health system isn't there. Some real hard choices have to be made. And you know what? Nobody even wants to talk about those things. Those are choices that people are just afraid to talk about. Let's face it, we're going to have to somewhat ration health care. You're not going to, you know, we all know the horror stories where we have people that are on their deathbed and the medical system is pounding all kinds of things from hip transplants to who knows what into these people and pretty much wasting money. But nobody can say no. We can't say to these people, well, you know what? You don't have much time left. We're not going to put the money into it. Another problem is I just read an article not too long ago about the Austin ER, which over 6 years had 2,678 visits for 9 people at a cost of over $3 million. I mean, this is just one example of the waste in the healthcare system. And, you know, somebody's got to tell these people, no, you just can't come back. We're not going to take care of you anymore.
Wendell.
Well, you know, the reality is that we could pay for it. We could pay for universal coverage if we had reform that really does reform the system. One thing that that people need to keep in mind is that the current multi-payer system that we have now, with a lot of private companies that I've mentioned before, we have enormous money that's wasted on administrative expenses, not just at the insurance companies themselves, but that is created by the insurance companies that have to be spent by doctors and hospitals. It costs doctors a lot of money to be able to hire the staff to deal with all the requirements of all insurance companies they have to deal with. Same with hospitals. About 30% of the dollars in our system, 30% are go toward administrative functions directly because of the system we've got. And that is not just me talking. That's McKinsey and Company, which is an international consulting firm that does a lot of work for the insurance industry, has made makes that fact clear in a report that it did as recently as 2007. So there is money that is available. It's just the way that we spend our money in this country right now makes it impossible for a lot of people who need care to have it. When people go to the emergency room, you're right. That's the worst place for a lot of people to go for care. But if they don't have insurance coverage, often they have no alternative. That's where they can go to get care. And as a consequence of that and the system we've got now, all of us are paying a hidden tax of about $1,000 a year in our insurance premiums just to cover that uncompensated care. So, in other words, the money is there. It just needs to be spent in different ways, and a lot of the money that is spent on administrative functions should not be. That's money that's wasted. The Medicare system doesn't spend nearly as much money on administration as the private system does.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email that's come in. Why have insurance commissioners been largely silent about problems in the healthcare system, Wendell?
Well, some of them are more vocal than others. As an industry, the National Association of Insurance Commissioners has testified before Congress about some of the things that insurance commissioners as a group think should be done with healthcare reform. They're very concerned that that the federal legislation might strip them of some regulatory functions and powers, which I agree with them would be a bad thing, shifting a lot of the regulatory burden from the states to the federal government. In some cases, might be a good idea, but the problem is the legislation probably would not include adequate funding for a federal Department of Labor, for example, to be able to be an effective enforcer of the regulation. That's one of the problems. We have some good regulation on the books, primarily at the state level, but there is not nearly enough money that's available to the insurance commissioners to do as good a job of enforcing those regulations as they should.
Thank you, Michael, for your call. Fred from Waters Mead, Michigan. Hi, Fred.
Hi. First of all, I wanted to say, Wendell, I really admire you for your convictions of doing what you did. A couple questions. First of all, you having been a corporate PR person, are you surprised that the administration or support groups like MoveOn.org aren't getting the message out, like on TV advertisements? It just seems like the truth's not getting out there. The second question I have is, if this goes down to defeat, is there any way on some of these important measures, can Barack Obama assign executive orders to get some of these things implemented if it can't be done through legislation?
Thank you. Okay, thanks.
Very good question. I have been surprised that the president and other advocates of reform, that they didn't seem to be prepared for what has developed in this debate. I'm just baffled that they weren't anticipating what the industry would be doing. I mean, it is as if they didn't pay attention to what happened in the past. They seem to be so preoccupied on not making the same mistakes that the Clintons made back in 93-94 that they just weren't focusing on some of the things that they should have been focusing on. I think it probably was a good idea not to have the administration craft the legislation and just hand it to Congress as happened during the Clinton years, but they went too far in the other way. I think that the administration didn't exert enough leadership to Congress as to what it felt was important to include in the legislation. Secondly, I don't think that the administration or the members of or these other groups advocating reform have done an effective job of communicating, of making sure people understand why we're having this debate in the first place. They haven't used the language that resonates with people like the opponents have. And, you know, that baffles me because it's not rocket science. You don't talk necessarily about the mechanics of reform in ways that people don't understand or tune out. You need to make sure that people understand at the gut level why we need to have reform and what the consequences of not doing reform will be.
Mm-hmm.
With regards to executive order, yeah, there are some things I think that the president might be able to do, but not nearly enough to fix the system, which is broken so badly.
Yeah. And we have about 30 seconds left. What does Cigna think about what you're doing, Wendell?
Well, I suspect they're not very happy about
it. I would think not, yeah.
Yeah. They haven't, I've not heard directly from them, but I know from what I used to do for them that this would have been really annoying.
Right. Thank you so much, Wendell, for being with us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Wendell Potter, our guest. He is now senior fellow on healthcare at the Center for Media and Democracy. He did work for the major health insurance company Cigna for a number of years, most recently as the company's chief corporate spokesman. And he changed his mind about the direction he wanted his life to take after seeing so many people without health insurance and efforts by his company to deny people insurance. All right. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, to Rob Schroeder for on-air production in our Milwaukee studios. We do want to remind you, Friday evening, tomorrow at 7, NPR has a news healthcare special. Robert Siegel will recap the recent political developments in the healthcare debate, and that's going to be tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, taking the place of the second hour of On Point. Our healthcare forum at Frederick Cancer Center is September 16. It should be very good and informative, so please make sure that you listen to that. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.